Today, we're talking about why having a social life as a parent to autistic kids can feel nearly impossible. And no, it's not just in your head. So why is it so hard to make plans? Why does it feel like we're always letting someone down, or worse, being left behind?
Welcome to Embracing Autism, a podcast for parents of autistic children seeking advice and support while spreading awareness and acceptance of autism spectrum disorder. I'm Leah.
And I'm Matt.
And each week we will discuss our journey with autism and talk about how to embrace your child's individuality while providing guidance, tips, resources, and sharing our personal stories. This is
Embracing Autism.
Hi, Embracers.
Welcome back.
Social life. Yeah, I don't have one of those. Do you have one of those?
I do, but not in the traditional sense. So like...
we don't count talking to yourself if that's what you're thinking.
No, but that would be a good second. I was going to say the best I can do for social life is like talking to our kids, like therapists, like the OT, ST, the office manager. Like that is basically my social life because those are the people that I interact with the most on any given week. So yeah, I feel like that's kind of the ongoing struggle with kids on the spectrum. Like you don't get a chance to really develop much of one.
Yeah, I'm going to set aside the fact that I'm autistic and already have issues socializing in general. So I'm going to kind of set that aside for this discussion and focus on what I think is just specific to parenting special needs kids in general. One of the things that I've noticed is that for us, for example, we have a challenge in making and keeping a social life active because I don't know if you've noticed, but we can't really set plans in stone because you never really know what mood our kid is going to be in that day, or if they're going to be like, you know, just not having it, if they're going to be like super elopement risk that day. Like I know for our oldest, depending on her mood, she might be perfectly happy, totally content, absolutely ready to socialize. And there could be other days where she just wakes up and you can tell it's going to be one of those days where she's not going to want to participate in anything. She's going to want to elope at any perceived threat or any perceived, I guess, demand because of that whole pathological demand avoidance stuff. So for us, it's hard to make sure that we are following through with plans and not necessarily like cancel plans at the last minute because we don't really know if our kids are going to be able to participate or not until basically like 5 minutes before we're supposed to go.
And we've had a lot of situations like that. I'm thinking of like when we went on kind of vacation, like we have plans to like, oh, okay, we'll go to the bookstore. We'll like walk around with like the kids for a little bit, like basically in a mall. And we had the plans of like kind of like hanging out there for a little bit. But you could tell right from the very beginning, like, okay, it's over stimulating them. And like they are clearly struggling just kind of with all the different sounds, noises, smells, whatever that their challenges are. So we knew relatively early on, like, okay, this is not going to be a successful day. I'd say the big challenge too is depends on what you want to do as far as a social interaction with them. So if you take them to like the playground, if it's not a fenced in playground, I feel like that creates additional struggles because like, instead of just like sitting on the bench with like, I don't know, your friend, whoever you're having the play day with, you're kind of almost like hovering a little bit to make sure like, okay, I've got eyes on the kids. They're not making any like mad dashes for the highway. Like we're okay.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's the hard thing. Like when I go to a playground that does not have a fence, I'm usually on my feet, just making sure like I can see them at all times and they're not like wandering off or anything. So that just, I mean, it makes it difficult to socialize with another parent when you are not able to sit next to them and have a conversation unless they're roaming with you.
Yeah. I think that's definitely a big one too, because a lot of times the way that you make friends as like a parent is you have mom dates or you have dad dates. And basically how that tends to go is like your kids play together. And while they're playing together, the parents get to quote unquote play together. They get to socialize. They get to have their adult time while the kids have their kid time. But the issue with autism is that our kids aren't necessarily capable of always initializing those social conversations together or those social play activities together. So they need a little more hands-on approach, or they might need a lot of hands-on approach. And that's besides the elopement. So on top of that, you have potential elopement risk, or you have maybe pica or something like that, where maybe you have to keep an eye on them because they might be putting stuff in their mouth that shouldn't be in their mouth. Or they might be prone to either lashing out at a kid. So maybe if they get startled, they might shove a kid, or maybe they'll scream. And then, you know, there's just so many things that could potentially go wrong if the environment that they're in is not exactly right for them. And so it makes it kind of unpredictable. And because of that, you're kind of always on guard. So you're always kind of watching and making sure, even if you don't have to be hands-on with them, your antenna still needs to be up and you still have to be observant and making sure that everything's going smoothly, because it can always change at like a second's notice.
And we have had some progress. I mean, I'm just thinking in general, like sometimes we try to flock to parents of kids who also have autism as well, because they kind of know some of the challenges that go along with it. So they are aware of like, oh, like elopement risk. So these other things are in the back of their mind as well, because like on the job training, like you basically learn it kind of as you go. So like when you are having them play like with like a neurotypical, yes, making sure I'm using the right term.
Yep, that's right.
So when they're playing with a neurotypical, that parent has not necessarily had to worry as much about like, oh, the kid putting gravel in their mouth, elopement risks, them struggling with spatial awareness on the playground. Like typically speaking, they don't have to struggle or they don't have to learn these challenges with their kid because it's not relevant. But when you have another parent who has a child on the spectrum, it does help because they are also aware of some of these challenges for their own children. So that kind of allows for better social interactions, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But again, you're still in the same situation where if it's not a fenced in playground, you both are now on your feet kind of wandering around making sure that your kid isn't going to fall from the sky because they don't realize that they're missing a ledge. So the conversation is very limited, let's say, because you're both kind of distracted as to where the kids are.
And if you are dealing with people in the public who aren't understanding or aware of autism, I feel like another reason that your social life changes and becomes more challenging is because a lot of parents end up always feeling like they're apologizing or having to apologize all the time in public. And I know that there's like two different kind of pools of thought there. There's some people that are just like, you shouldn't have to apologize. Don't apologize to anyone. And then there's others that are like, it's so like uncomfortable. I feel like I have to apologize just so I don't feel judged. And I don't really think there's a right or wrong approach, but it's definitely something that I feel like all parents would relate to, because when you're out in public, you often have eyes on you because your child stands out. If you're me, you as a parent stand out as well. So I think that that's something that makes it uncomfortable for parents to necessarily engage, even if their kid is in a good mood, even if we're in a good mood. We might not necessarily want to, just out of like fear of like, okay, what are people going to say? Are people going to be talking about me behind my back? You know, things like that. And I think that that's something that people who don't have a special needs child don't quite understand.
Yeah, I find that I'm typically like the type of person to like apologize more so because like that's just kind of like my character in general. Like if I'm like, I mean, and not just like with the kids, like if I'm like walking in a direction and someone like also like, you know, you do like the little dance thing, like you're both like walking towards each other and you both like move to the same direction. Like even if I do that with someone, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, let me like get out of your way kind of thing. So like, it's like almost like it's so second nature. Like I would have to like almost like try and like stop myself consciously because it's just like, I'm just like so used to like if
yeah,
just in that situation. So I feel like it's kind of been extended to like my kids as well. So if I see like a behavior that my kid is doing on theirs, I'm just kind of like, oh, I'm sorry. Like she didn't mean that or whatever the case is. But that's just kind of like
reflexive, like a reflex.
Right. But I mean,
not intentional.
But I guess if I think about it, like I guess that would be an opportunity. Like if you wanted to actually like try and explain like autism, sometimes I'm not really sure how well it would be even bothered with because like I'm not sure that person is receptive or like what the circumstances are for it. But that's just kind of like where I typically find myself on the playground.
That is one of the things too. I mean, not necessarily on the playground, but just in general, is that we're not always sure if friends, family, or peers are going to be understanding of the situation. Sometimes you're lucky and people are understanding, but more often than not, what happens is when you end up having a child who has some sort of disability, the friends that you thought were your friends suddenly start drifting away because they start realizing like, oh, your schedule's too chaotic. I can't accommodate it because of all the therapies. Or maybe like, oh, your child is too boisterous to be around my child. Or maybe they feel like their child is being bullied by your child, which is also possible because our kids, you know, the social faux pas and things like that that they tend to do, sometimes it comes off as bullying when it's not. Like my eldest daughter, she is very rigid. And so whenever she plays, she has a certain thing in mind. And if people don't play the certain way, she gets frustrated because she really needs that script and the rigidity to know how to play. And so sometimes she can get very upset if another person's not moving the way they're supposed to be moving, saying the lines they're supposed to be saying. And to other kids and other parents, that can look like somebody who's just controlling, somebody who's just like overly aggressive and things like that. And because of that, they're less likely or less willing to empathize. They don't see it necessarily as a disability unless you're very clear. But even so, a lot of people say it's just an excuse and that you're just a bad parent. As you can imagine, it's very hard to have a social life or relationships with people who genuinely believe you're a bad parent because of your child's disability.
And sometimes it can be challenging. So I'm thinking for our oldest daughter, for example, she likes to have people try and like script with her. But what's challenging is like when she wants you to script something that you yourself have not seen, so you don't know what the dialogue is, and she's like feeding you word by word, and you're like,
yeah, literally.
Say this. And it was like, yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's really funny though, because she recently had her school play and they gave her the perfect role because she was the narrator. And we're like, yes, that's exactly where she needs to be. The narrator, the one who's feeding everybody the context.
I mean, yeah, it works out well. So I mean, like, yeah, if you're able to find like that little area that you shine, like, go for it. But yeah, I mean, it is unfortunate because like you do have to build a community. I want to say that's almost different than the ones that you would have had previously pre-kids. A lot of the parents who have kids that are not kind of on the spectrum, they don't really understand some of the challenges. So they might still be able to like socialize you with you, but some things are kind of not as, they don't flow as well. It's kind of as far as behaviors and things like that. So it might be seen as like, oh, you're doing a bad job parenting, like you said. So it's almost like you have to, like, when your kids kind of get on the spectrum and you start seeing some of these behaviors, it's almost like you have to suddenly start then to create another social group just for that.
You said kids get on the spectrum like it's a bus.
I mean, get on, get off, go wherever you need to.
I just thought that was funny. Yeah. And that's the other thing. We have actually gone out of our way to try to create more social meetup opportunities for the special needs community, not just autism, but special needs in general. And we've noticed that despite us trying to accommodate as best as possible, provide childcare, try to find the day that works the best with everyone, it's very, very difficult to get people to show up. And I mean, that's with like hundreds of people, like our messaging going out to hundreds of people, essentially. So what I've noticed is the need can be there, the desire can be there, and maybe the childcare providers can be there, but it's still virtually impossible because, again, it's highly dependent on how your child is feeling that day because, I mean, sometimes you just can't even get them out the door. And also, just because you provide the resources doesn't mean the child's going to be comfortable in that environment or they're going to feel safe in that environment. Because a lot of times you have that autistic rigidity. And so our kids, for example, we can be bringing them anywhere that looks slightly office-like. So if it looks like a dentist, if it looks like a doctor's office, they will potentially have a meltdown and not want to go. And has nothing to do with the actual environment, like let's say it's Sunday school or something like that. It's all because they have like a medical dental phobia and they associate anything that has like chairs and a desk as potentially being a doctor's appointment. So that makes it very hard for us to take them pretty much anywhere that has that type of setup, regardless of what it's for. That's another thing that people who don't have kids that are on the spectrum understand or empathize with, because they don't have to deal with like these very nuanced things that you have to prepare for in advance just to be able to get them out the door and into the location so that you have time to hang out with other people.
Yeah, it's true. So you almost have to have like, either you have to have previously gone to the place that your kids will ultimately go with the play. So like, I mean, obviously like, we keep going to like kind of the playground, but it can't really be, I would argue, like a new environment and expect them to thrive. I feel like you have to at least have gone there once before, get them comfortable with it so they know a little bit what to expect. And I realized, like, I mean, I'm thinking about my own childhood. We kind of went wherever like our parents took us. It wasn't like, oh, okay, we're going to have like a trial run before we have like a social meetup with friends at this location. So, I mean, that can be challenging in itself, depending on the place that you want to go. You might not have the opportunity to go to like, I don't know, Chuck E. Cheese before your friends or whoever invites you to go. So, I mean, yeah, I guess you could try and rely on like social stories and try and like let your kid know in advance. But I feel like it's different from telling them what they're going to experience and hear and sounds and smells and all that, versus like them actually going prior and then having that knowledge in the back of their head. Because obviously we can tell them based on like what our experience or knowledge is about it, but obviously they're perceiving and living a different environment with their sensory input than we can explain to them. So it's automatically going to, of course, be different than what they're actually going to experience.
Yeah, and that kind of adds to the unpredictability of the whole thing, because if it is new, you don't really know how they're going to react. But that also kind of goes into why even having inclusive outings can be a challenge, because having a special needs child or an autistic child can be so hands-on that even if the environment is like perfect for them, you still have to keep an eye on them. You still have to make sure everything's going okay. You still have to potentially provide very specific food for them throughout the event and stuff like that. So it leaves very little time for you as the parent to even have the opportunity to socialize with another parent or just to say hello. I know that like for me, I've hung out before at the playground. We did like a play date. And so it would be kind of one of those like you say hi in passing where you're both kind of like walking in the opposite direction, chasing after your kid. You're like, hey, oh, this is fun, isn't it? Yep. And then you go and do a loop as you're chasing your kid. And then you hope you get them on the next flyby because that's essentially what it is when you have a kid who doesn't necessarily stay put or play in one specific location and doesn't elope. You have to kind of hover around, and our kids aren't necessarily going to hover in the same direction. So that makes it really difficult to have a conversation or get to know the person if you can't even be within like close proximity to them.
Do you ever play the fun game like when you're both like walking in opposite directions? You know how they always do like the hi, how are you? Like they're trying to like start like a conversation. So what I try to do is answer the answer the question and then throw it back to them as we're already past. So then like they have to like almost like yell how they're doing.
It's like an echo game.
Yeah.
Yes, it's like playing echo.
Yeah, no, it's great. Because then it's like awkward situation for everyone.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, yeah, obviously, I mean, if playgrounds that are fenced in allow a little bit more relaxability, if that's a fun way.
Relaxation? Kind
of yeah, or relaxability. I like relaxability. mostly because like, unless your kids are good at like climbing fences to elope, you have a little bit more chill.
Ability relax. To sit down.
And relax, yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously there's still other struggles as far as like, if you're struggling with like pica, spatial awareness and other things like that, but it alleviates like one main stressor as far as being in any new location.
And I know like we've talked about playgrounds a lot, but it's not necessarily, you know, just a playground thing. Like it can just be like trying to meet up at local connection group. It can be trying to meet up for a board game night, anything like that. It's virtually impossible unless you have the whole child care situation set up. And what I've noticed too is a lot of times there are parents who also feel some sort of like guilt or some sort of like grief associated with their social life. And it kind of goes both ways. There's like the guilt of, for example, if I do go out and I do actually have an opportunity to socialize with another parent, am I abandoning my child? Am I not being there for them when they need me? Is this okay? Like we get so locked into the caretaker mindset that sometimes there comes an associated guilt with that, so that we don't even enjoy ourselves when we are out and about spending time with other people. And I know that like Matt and I, like I've done that where I've tried to go out and then when I come back immediately, I'm like, where are my babies? Or like, maybe I'll try to say, you know, today's the day I'm going to go and like, just walk around the store for a little bit and just relax for a little bit. And the whole time I'm there, all I can think about is like, oh, my kid would like this. My kid would like that. So it's like really hard to disconnect even when you have the opportunity. And I think that's normal for like regular parenting. But I think when you have an autistic kid, it's just so much heavier because I feel like you have a much stronger bond and connection to a kid that you've had to go through so much together with.
The time I think about is like, it's been a few years now where we had like your family babysitting our kids while we went on like a little weekend getaway.
Mini moon?
Right. A weekend getaway for our anniversary. And the whole time we're like, I hope the kids are okay. I really hope they're okay. And then we got back and we're like, they did not ask about you once. Like they had no interest in seeing you. they had no interest. They're like, yeah, okay, cool. Like we're on to bigger and better things. So it's like the whole time, like we're like, oh, hopefully the kids are doing okay. Like I think that I kind of miss them and I want to like see them. And then they're totally fine without us. So go figure.
Yeah. But I think as a consequence, what ends up happening is that if we don't take that time, we end up missing out on community and connection. And I feel like a lot of us feel disconnected from the community. A lot of us do feel like we're lacking a social life. I know for me personally, like I do feel like there's a bit of a void there. I do feel like I'm able to get like little bits and pieces here and there, but I don't know. It's strange for me because I'm like autistic. So my specific desires in a social life are very different than most people's. So that already adds an additional layer. But just taking that all aside, I think as a parent who is so hands-on with our kids, so hands-on with all the therapies, all the work that's associated with autism, the paperwork, the IEP meetings, all of the stuff that goes into it. At the end of the day, what also happens is that you just end up burnt out. Like you're just so burnt out that you don't even have the energy to become part of that community or to try to connect. And for me, I don't know if it's just the autism. You guys can let me know in the comments if you're not autistic. Do you also experience this type of like social burnout? I am so burnt out from the day to day that I don't have the energy to try to then go into a social situation and try to be like that perky, got it all together, mom. Hey, how you doing? Let's talk about the weather sort of stuff. And again, I know some of that is the autism, but I feel like even though somebody is not autistic, if you're going through such an intense day-to-day caretaking role, it's going to be hard for you to just turn that off and then go into a social setting and just be your bubbly self. I just feel like naturally, autistic or not, that's going to be a challenge.
I guess that's true. I mean, I sit by the window every single day and I watch for the mail person so I can run out and have a conversation with them.
What are you, a dog?
All I know is 2:17, there comes the mail truck and there I go to have a conversation. I do enjoy trying to like go out and get like little bursts of conversations. Like I feel like, yeah, I definitely really struggle with the social life myself. Mostly because like, again, my social life is like, oh, when I go to get coffee, like it's a small coffee shop that we go to. So like I'm on a first name basis with like everyone who works there. And then obviously like the therapy is like, I talk to them because that's where we're hanging out the most with the kids. But beyond that, like I really can't think of anything that is not either kid related or like customer service related. Occasionally, like we'll be able to, if we have babysitting, like go out with a like family friend for like dinner or something. But like, again, that is such a rare exception to the rule because we never ever have childcare. So
that's like a once a year type of thing to put that into context for people.
Right. Which means if that is the circumstances, then most of your social life is with your kids. And then there's the challenges that you have to contend with. So it's kind of like, I mean, I would definitely say it is worth it to do because the off chance that you suddenly decide, oh, I'm going to kind of be kind of like a shut-in and I'm not going to go out and be in the community. I feel like that's kind of a very dark place to turn because then your kids are never going to improve in a social setting. And then you're basically just going to kind of be imprisoning yourself out of fear of what's going to happen.
One of the things that we can do, though, in this is to really work on reframing what socialization looks like for us. So this is something, as an autistic person, I've had to work on myself. But with someone who doesn't necessarily have the resources to be able to or the opportunity to be able to go out there and socialize like you would have pre-children or pre-autism, there needs to be certain tweaks to, you know, the standards, tweaks to our thinking of what is socialization, what does it look like now? I guess there is a little bit of a stigma to that sometimes, but I feel like there shouldn't be any guilt or stigma tied to it. So it's kind of just reworking your mindset about, well, it's okay. It's okay to go ahead and change what my social life is going to look like and be accepting and forgiving of the fact that, you know, hey, I can't be like everyone else and that's okay. You know, like I have my own way of doing things. My kids have their own way of doing things. And don't feel the guilt associated with that because some people out there, they like to bully people who are different. And as a parent to special needs kids, that means we're different parents too. And we stand out too. I've had to learn that, you know, I have to just not care what people think. And if they think it's weird that I want to just stay at home and I'd rather have somebody come to my house and maybe I invite them over for coffee and a board game, or I invite them over for like lunch and just conversation rather than meeting them up at the mall or a movie or something like that. I mean, if they think it's weird, that's all I can do. And that's what works for me and my family. And, you know, you just got to find somebody who's okay with doing that. Matt has mentioned that we've met people through therapy. because of that, we have found people who are like us and are understanding to that. So one of the things that we've done is we've been working on finishing our basement so that we can bring people to our house, because for us, it's a much more attainable goal. It's much more realistic for us to have things on our terms, because then we don't have to worry about all those extra fears or concerns with our kids. Things are on our terms. So that's another thing to consider, and another way that we can kind of reframe what socializing looks like for us.
It's harder for the kids to elope from our own house just because, like,
all the locks.
Well, we got like gates too, as far alarms. As like, well, like baby gates and such like that. So it's more secure, I guess. We have everything on lockdown.
If they escape the back door, they're just in a fenced in yard anyway. So there's like another layer of protection.
True. So, I mean, yeah, I feel like it's a little bit more safety. Granted, they get hurt with anything, but like there's less likelihood of like them getting hurt, like with like spatial awareness, because this is their environment. So yeah, they'll probably still get hurt, but like at least like it's not something that is out of the ordinary, I guess.
Yeah, I think what we've really just had to learn is to be honest with our friends and family about what we can and can't do and what our new reality is, and to not be fearful of any retaliation or what they're going to think. Judgment's always going to be there, and we've had our fair share of judgment, and it still comes at us, you know, from different sources. And we've just had to learn, like, you know what, at the end of the day, we're doing what's best for us and our kids. And at the end of the day, our kids and our family is what's most important to us. So while we value feedback and opinions, we're not going to take it all personally, and we're not necessarily going to take it all in if it's not what we deem is the best for our kids or our family. So that's something that I think some people have a hard time with, is setting those boundaries. Some people have a hard time not wanting to look like a bad parent. So you kind of give in thinking that maybe if I do it their way, they will think that I'm a better parent. I don't have to worry about the backlash. And I would just say to that, like, are you truly happy as a parent? Is your child happy? Are you guys as a family unit happy with that? If you are, go for it. If you're not, don't feel like you have to give in to that pressure, and just rework what socialization looks like for you guys. Rework it in a way that works for you without having to concede ground to people who don't have to deal with your day-to-day and who it's not for. Because at the end of the day, it's your life. It's your family's happiness. It's your family unit. You guys need to do what works for you guys while, you know, taking other people's thoughts into consideration, but not necessarily having to apply it.
So basically establishing expectations essentially for what the circumstances are at hand. So like, as far as like establishing, like there are limitations to like what we would be able to manage. So then like, there's no like surprise. Granted, we always have friends and family who don't necessarily believe us, and then we have to let them learn and experience for themselves. The only thing we can really do is basically establish the limitations and kind of let them know, these are kind of what we kind of observed, and this is like our expectations for how, what we think we can even manage as far as a family.
Yeah, it's kind of like our family motto is a little bit, you do you within reason, where it's kind of like, let everyone be their independent self to the point where you're not harming somebody else, essentially. If what we're doing is harming somebody, then we'll take more serious consideration. But if our family is, you know, functioning as a well-oiled machine the way we're doing things, and it's just that people think it's weird, or people think it's different, or people just don't think it's to their standards, that's not something that I would consider worth me changing our whole life for. So just think about what your family values are. Think about what it is that you guys want to do as a family, and stay the course. And of course, if you want to change that up, go ahead and do it, but just make sure that the reason you guys are changing it is because you want to and you feel like it would benefit you and your family, and not because you feel like you're being pressured into it. It's not that we're flaky. It's not that you're antisocial. It's just that we're parents navigating an entirely different world from our neurotypical peers and those who are parenting neurotypical children. And you and I, we are all doing the best that we can. So if no one has told you lately, we totally see you. We get it. We're in this just as deep as you are. So just make sure that you're giving yourself permission to slow down, protect your peace, and build the kind of connections that truly support you, your family, your kids, and understand where you guys are coming from.
And it is hard. I just think of like some of the families where it's like, oh, okay, kids, let's get in the car. We're going to go wherever. That is a luxury that we don't really have. Like, we very rarely try and surprise our kids because we know what the surprise will basically entail. Like, yes, there are good surprises, but it can also be very overwhelming. They might not know or like the environment that they're in. It is a difficult situation to be in. And I mean, I'm not going to lie and say like Leah and I do it great. I mean, we still have our fair share of meltdowns and struggles and screaming kids. And
I was going to be like, and the kids do too.
Yes, that's true. And us coming home much earlier than expected for a day that we thought would be like fun and adventurous. It turns out to be kind of almost like a dud, essentially, because it's like nothing went well. And we had to kind of pack in saying like, okay, this is not the right time to try this. So, I mean, like, we're still trying to figure the world out and we're here waiting for you.
This sounds like one of those ads for like the Love Connection. This is my life. I'm waiting for the right one. So if this episode resonated with you, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and take a moment to reflect on these questions. What would it look like to let go of the guilt around canceled plans? What makes you feel safe enough to be your full, unfiltered self? What makes you feel like your child is safe enough to be their full, unfiltered self? And how can we create more space for real connection in the chaos of all that is parenting? Or especially when it comes to parenting special needs children. Make sure to drop your answers in the comments on YouTube, Facebook, at Autism Wish, or you can join a Patreon at patreon.com/autismwish and leave it in the comments there. And if you haven't yet, please consider joining the Patreon for as little as $5 a month. This will get you bonus entries into our monthly Embracing Autism grant and also unlock exclusive perks while also allowing us to fund these programs for y'all. So with that said, we will see y'all next time. Bye.
Bye.
This has been the audio from the Embracing Autism podcast live stream series. Please check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@autismwish to catch these shows live. Otherwise, stick around next week for our next episode. This is Embracing Autism.